new CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
I'm Kim Griddles of DogMan.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. We are going to try it again after technical difficulties, kind of like the football team. We had a podcast ready to go for game day. That got screwed up. We had a podcast ready to go post-game. That got screwed up. So we're here early morning on Saturday with football on in the background, coffee in my cup. So hopefully that kicks in at some point. And I might have to step out here or there if I get a couple of phone calls that I'm expecting back. So stay with us. But tough loss last night, 40-13. Washington State just basically ran all over Washington, passed the ball all over Washington. And I don't know about how you guys feel, but, you know, we've been doing this a long time and losses typically don't get to me that much. I'm always, you know, just move on to the next. Last night, it just kind of lingered. I woke up this morning, and last night's just kind of bothered me with a lot of things and the way things went. And, you know, the bright point is that we got to see the debut of Sam Huard as a starting quarterback. Chris, I know you have some thoughts on that.
Well, I have some thoughts because I was kind of curious as to what the motivation would have been. You know, I was very curious to see what Bob Gregory was going to say post-game about it. And he, you know, basically said they did it to get a spark. And, you know, my feeling on that is, okay, I generally speaking, yes, the offense needed a spark all season long. There's been something that's really been missing. And it's really been mostly missing on the offensive line and in the run game. But if you felt a need that a change of quarterback was going to do it because you didn't think Dylan Morris was getting the job done, that's fine. I get that. But after he throws for a career high at Colorado, he throws for 380 some yards, and yes, he did have the interceptions, but I just found the idea that they needed a spark at that particular time very confusing. They could have used a spark, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, but when the offense goes for 400 and some yards against Colorado and looks like they, you know, the only thing that's stopping them from moving the ball is themselves. They were 14 of 21 on third downs at Colorado. And then Gregory talks about how them not being able to sustain drives was a huge part of last night's game. The whole response just seemed really, really confusing to me because I don't necessarily disagree with what he's saying, but the timing of it just seems so off to me. And maybe you guys have thoughts on that.
Yeah, my main takeaway from what you just said, Chris, I think you're putting too much credence into Bob Gregory saying they needed a spark, because you know as well as I do, coaches aren't always telling us the truth, and I think there was a lot more to it than that. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is I didn't mind seeing Sam Huard out there, but I thought the game plans were just very questionable. You know, offensively, they just continue to run some of the same things. You know, the offensive line still looks like just it's in complete disarray, couldn't handle the pass rush. And Washington State's a very active front four, front seven that they play, front three, whatever that, you know, whatever they're playing that day. But they're very active. So I understand that they were going to be a little harder to block than maybe a team that just rushes with four and does their thing. But defensively, I don't get it.
Yeah, we can get into the defense here in a little bit. But you know, with that offense, Scott.
The game plan on both sides, just if you're going to have a true freshman come in and play, I don't get why that was the game plan you decided to run.
It's the same game plan that they've had pretty much all year that's been ineffective. And I don't know how hard it is to really start and try to change things. But, you know, the opening pass, what was it? You know, a quick out to Odunze
for a 2-yard loss.
2-yard loss, and then they try another quick out. And I get you're trying to protect the quarterback, but I don't know, you know, just the quick outs, and it's just scared to, you know, Jimmy Lake always talked about being aggressive, and, you know, this is the least aggressive offense I've ever seen. I mean, it's the most passive, scared offense I've seen. And, you know, I don't buy the getting a spark thing from Bob Gregory at all. I understand that, you know, he's got to say things, and we're not always going to know what's going on. But I think kind of the pressure has been building to start Sam, because I think it's pretty obvious that he's the future quarterback, and let's just get him some experience and pay dividends for next year. And I think that's a lot, you know, on what was going on. But, you know, if you're going to put a freshman quarterback back there and his first start in a game like the Apple Cup, you at least have to be able to run the ball. And I still think that this offensive line is way better than the talent. But, you know, they had, what, 14 carries for 10 yards, was it, Scott?
Yeah, well, you know, and like I mentioned last night, it was 25 yards was lost by Sam Heward on that bat. You know, they lost 15 on a bat exchange, then he suffered a sack as well. And, you know, that's going to put the number down at 10, but that's still only 35 yards on 12 carries. I mean, that's not even 3 yards a carry.
We had a couple of nice carries by Kamari Pleasant and then Sean McGrew. And Sean McGrew mentioned, I don't know if you guys picked up on this, he mentioned that he had some pins and surgery on his hand last week. And Sean's out there giving it his all. Cam Davis was in a boot on the sidelines. Taj Davis had it looked like he had a knee brace on. But I'm just baffled by the performance of the offensive line this year, and I can't believe it that bad. And it's just, maybe I'm off base, but I just think that just it's a poorly designed offense, and half the time it looks like they don't know what they're doing because of the offense.
Yeah, it did. It all season long, it looked like a unit that was completely confused on what they were supposed to be doing. Their assignments, they blew many blocking assignments. They blew blitz pickups, all that different stuff. Some of that's on the quarterbacks, but some of that, a lot of that is on the offensive line. They're the one who's supposed to be doing it. And I saw offensive linemen getting pushed back into the quarterback several times. These are things we didn't see happen very much. And I don't know why that has changed. So I've got to believe that it has to do some with the scheme, but also with some of the coaching, because it's not like these players have gotten worse athletically. And they were effective as a unit under Scott Huff, you know, in 2017, 2018, 2019. They were effective, and they were even a little effective last season. So why is it so bad this year? I don't know.
Chris, the defensive scheme seems like maybe they found it back in the old archives and pulled it out and decided to run the defensive scheme when they had Danny Shelton, Shaq Thompson, and Hauli Kikaha. You know, it seems like they decided to run that, you know, where they had three defensive All-Americans to run the same scheme, and it didn't seem to work this year.
Well,
and last night specifically.
No, they've always run that three-man front when they were running against the air raid, and when they had, you know, Vita Vea and Greg Gaines and those guys, you know, and it's just they've done that before. And when you can get a moderate amount of pressure with three guys on five and really play cover eight and just confuse the heck out of the quarterback's eyes, you can get away with that when you're running air raid. But when you're running run and shoot, you're going to give up over 200 yards on the ground if you run a cover three, you know, cover eight. And that's exactly what they did. They gave up 209 yards on the ground and 245 through the air. And Bob Gregory, again, whether you take him at his word or not, admitted that, you know, they were late to switch into more of the four-man front. And again, that's kind of a microcosm for their run defense all year long. Slow to make decisions, slow to react, slow to change. And when you've got former players like Buda Baker out there saying, you need to put more pressure on the line, you can't do this. I mean, when those players are out there basically calling out the coaches, you know it's bad.
Yeah, and on the sidelines, you know, the term that I kept on hearing last night was emotionally spent. You know, the guys just looked like they were putting in the effort. It just looked like, you know, here we go again, especially after Washington State, you know, on their first drive. You know, the first couple of plays, it looked like they were going to be able to start Washington State and stop Washington State and have a little bit of momentum. But then right after that, you know, the long conversion on third down, and they just marched down the field, and boy, that was pretty much all it rode. They had a difficult time stopping Washington State.
Well, the problem I think is that ultimately when you play that three-man front, even if Jaden Delora was playing air raid and Mike Leach was still there, you've got a quarterback that not only was extremely accurate, he was 27-32, but he was I think he'd only missed maybe like one pass by half. I mean, he was on fire. I mean, he was getting anything he wanted, and that was because the three guys up front weren't getting any sort of pressure. And on top of that, if they did start to get some pressure, he was able to use his feet and escape and make positive yardage just with his feet. I mean, he only ran three times according to the stats, but he averaged, over 10 yards a carry with those three carries. That's a great safety valve. You know, if you're Jake Dickert, and you know that, Washington's going to try to sit there and confuse him and try to use their, at that time, number one pass defense in the country, try to really confuse him and get after him. And they were never able to do anything against Delora because he was in rhythm, he was in flow, and basically was able to do anything he wanted.
Scott, I'm sure he got hit a couple of times, but boy, I'm having a tough time remember it. I just have this vision of him last night just standing in the pocket and looking to his left, looking to his right, looking in the middle, looking at his feet, looking at the sky, looking at the air, and then finding an open receiver.
Yeah, I questioned it all game long. I mean, I was sitting up there, and Chris, you and I have been up in the press box when Softy loses his stuff. Right. And he's just going bananas. I wasn't on that level, but I was more animated in this game than I've probably been up there. Just watching what they were doing, how they were backing off two of the best cover corners in the country. They were backing them off and just giving Washington State 10-yard completions whenever they wanted them. And
it's kind of like that old saying, you want to know why they did that? Well, they've been doing it all season. They've been doing it all season.
Because they could.
Because yeah. They've been doing it all season.
Yeah, I just, you watch it and you're just like, this is the last game. Would you rather lose 40-13 and just be killed by your scheme and deciding to go just allow them completion after completion and not really challenge them at all until they get in the red zone? Or would you rather lose 49-13 or 49-20 and maybe be a little more aggressive and you got beat over the top a couple times? It's so much harder to complete a long pass than it is a short pass.
And I guess a quarterback is not known to throw the deep ball. He's going to cut you underneath the whole game, and they're still giving him all that. Okay,
and
go ahead.
This is taking nothing away from Jaden Delora. I think he's a heck of a quarterback. He's probably their best quarterback from a leadership standpoint. I'll probably say since maybe Ryan Leaf. I mean, leadership standpoint, he's not going to put up the stats that some of Mike Leach's guys did, but his leadership and ability to use his legs and do what he can that way, it's such a different look for Washington State. And I think he's going to wind up being a very good quarterback for them over the next couple of years.
Yeah, just hard to watch a lot of what was going on. Like I said, offensive line, running backs, the wide receiver. We'll talk about Sam Heward here shortly, but defensive line, linebackers, and I didn't see much out there to be excited about or even to be happy about, other than your defensive secondary, and they had their moments as well, too.
Well, what I find interesting is that even if Jimmy Lake had been there and was still the head coach, I just get the sense that they would have probably tried to run the same scheme because they just are so stubborn and arrogant about it, and they just think they can stop that kind of spread attack. And it's clear that what Washington State is running with the run and shoot and what Nick Rolovich implemented is very different than what Mike Leach would have done. Mike Leach basically just had one kind of run, and that was a draw, sprint draw, whatever you want to call it, but just the little thing off the read zone, and that was pretty much it. And that's when they got close to the goal line is when they would start running it, and you could just stack the box and go to town. And you couldn't do that against these guys. You couldn't do it. And on top of it, Washington, they have not really won the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball all year long consistently. And so it did not take much for Washington to not just control Washington's defensive front, because they're just, you know, they had a numerical advantage against them basically all game. But then even on offense, they just were quicker to the point and were able to create havoc with guys that were, I guess you consider them lighter guys, but they were guys that were actually motivated and they got the job done. And Washington's front just looks slow and lethargic, and like they basically have all season long.
We talked earlier about Sam Heward's first start, but Scott, give me impressions of Sam Heward last night.
Well, he looked like a freshman who had only played five series all season long, and three of those series were three and outs. So you're talking about a guy who had less than 25 snaps of college football going into a start in a very tough environment against a good Washington State team in a rivalry game. A lot of emotions. Washington in the middle of their turmoil and coaching search and trying to find that new direction. And Washington State in the middle of their own turmoil, but playing well. Possibility of winning the Pac-12 North if Oregon State beats Oregon today. And then, you know, Washington throws him in there against a team who also, besides all that, has lost seven straight. You don't think that sticks in the craw of some of these guys? I mean, they have a countdown clock in their locker room. Chris made a great point at the beginning, and I don't disagree with it, although I was one who was like, if you're going to start Sam Heward, just start him now. Let's see what it looks like. But I thought it would be a better performance from everybody. But it just throwing him in there like they did was very questionable. And then you have Softy Greg Lewis and Dick Baird coming out and saying, you know, talking about how, okay, if he looks great, it sends you into the offseason. You can sell the fact that we've got a five-star quarterback ready to go. He's finally going to get in there and have some reps. And then, but what happens if he craps the bed? Well, I wouldn't say he crapped the bed. It wasn't all on him, but that is not a good showcase for if Washington wants to showcase that to other recruits or head coaches that, hey, look what we can bring you in and what you're going to have available. You just saw a guy throw four interceptions, and you saw a guy who couldn't barely move the team, and you saw a guy who couldn't move the team enough until they got their first. They didn't get their first down until 4:33 was left in the second quarter. A horrible look for Washington.
And I'll just totally disagree with you, Scott. I think that you know, if you're going to put Sam in a position like that, guy's got to help him out. He just didn't get a lot of help from his wide receivers, his running backs, or his offensive line, and most of all the scheme and the play calling. But, you know, and I think I know Sam better than most out here, and I think he's got the type of temperament where this is probably going to motivate him more. I mean, when we go back and look at Justin Herbert's first start against Washington, you know, what happened, and it was a disaster, and I could, you know, probably see that as well from Sam Heward. But, you know, Chris, you take a look at them throwing him in there, I don't think they put him in a position to succeed.
No, they didn't. And that's why if they were going to try to maintain his redshirt, which they have, thankfully, but if they were going to do that, they should have played him at Colorado. Because the bottom line is Washington State was going to be incredibly motivated to win that game on Saturday. And they had every reason to do so. Washington had no motivation. They should have played the guy that was going to give them the best chance to win. And that was Dylan Morris. And that was always going to be Dylan Morris. I don't care what those players or coaches or anyone else says about it, but you cannot bench a kid that just threw for 380 plus yards and ran an offense that went for 425 or whatever it was, because the bottom line is that tells you, first of all, they're never going to get any run support. They got 10 yards on the ground, guys, yesterday. 10 yards against Washington State.
Against a team that was allowing almost 180, right?
Right. So that'll tell you the offensive line's not going to help you. The running game's not going to help you. In what way, shape, or form is putting out a true freshman in the in-state rivalry game ever going to make a good look to anybody, let alone, you know, a coaching staff that's going to get blown out? Because we were asking all week, guys, you know, Kim, you asked Bob Gregory, is this the game where you throw the kitchen sink? You asked him on Monday. And he's like, well, we just, you know, we'll see. You know, you're going to have to come to show up and see. Well, it was very clear from the very beginning as you said, Kim, they were scared. They were frightened. And I'm sorry, but isn't the next man up philosophy the idea that if the next guy has to come in, they have been prepping, they have been given the same game plan and can do the exact same things because they've been, you know, tasked with understanding the scheme and how to run that offense from the very, very beginning? Basically, what I'm saying is if you're going to ask Dylan Morris to do X, Y, and Z, you should be saying that Sam Heward can do X, Y, Z. And clearly from the game plan, right from the start, and the plays that they called, you could tell they did not have the same comfort level that Sam Heward could do X, Y, Z compared to what Dylan Morris is capable of doing. And that's why I don't understand why they made the decision to play him on Saturday. If they were going to play him in one of the last two games, they should have played him at Colorado. And
you
I know
really
that's going to sound like you know, backseat play calling and backseat coaching and all that. But to me, it makes total sense because Colorado had nothing to play for.
Well,
Colorado had nothing to play for.
This goes all the way back to the Arizona game. You know, it's just when I mean, we'd heard all week to expect Sam Heward to get anywhere from 2 to 4 series, and then he gets in for one series and hands the ball off. Four out of the 5 plays or 5 out of the 6 plays. And then you never see him again, you know, and if you're going to put him in with something that's meaningful, you know. And of course, Jimmy Lake was still, you know, the coach and trying to save his job at that, you know, time of the year, you know, point of the season. But, you know, when you say you don't understand the decision, I understand the decision not to play him in Colorado, but you know, if not playing him in Colorado, yeah, I still see the decision to play him in Washington State. This week, they probably should have played him at Colorado last week and had a little bit of a more soft landing for him. But, you know, he had 4 interceptions. I'm not putting those all on him, but I did see some good things from Sam Heward as well. You know,
the long ball. The long ball was his specialty last night.
Well, he threw some over the middle, too, that I thought were pretty good. And I think, you know, that you've got to put something on the receivers and not then, again, the offensive line not giving him the time. And then, you know, the pass rush from Washington State allowed because you just couldn't get the running game going either.
Yeah,
I think history will be kind to Sam Heward in time. That's not going to be a problem for him. I get that totally. And you're right. There is no way you can put all 4 of those interceptions on him. You could put a couple of them absolutely on him. But the bottom line is the coach's job. What is their first, second, and third jobs? To put players in positions to be successful. You cannot make an argument to me that tells me that those coaches put Sam Heward in a position to be successful in no way, shape, or form. And I probably would have told you that pregame. Because the bottom line is, you've got one team with Washington State that was incredibly motivated to win that game. You read the comments from guys like Max Borghi postgame, how they hate the Huskies, absolutely hate them with a passion. And then you go back the week before, you're playing on the road. I get that. But again, you know, if you're doing this for the future, Sam Heward's going to be playing as many road games as he's going to be playing home games. So that shouldn't be a problem. You're playing a team in Colorado that has nothing to play for, absolutely nothing to play for. The road atmosphere is not going to, shouldn't bother them.
Yep.
Shouldn't be an issue. And you know, you're not going to get any help in the run game. You're not going to get any help with the offensive line. So you might as well just try to figure out something, because nothing is going to change in terms of those two things between Colorado and Washington State. Cause you could have made an argument to me, honestly, like if Bob Gregory had come out post game and had said, guys, the reason why we played Sam Heward in the Apple Cup was because we needed that extra week to really get him ramped up. And we really felt like he gave us the best opportunity to win that game. That's not what he said. He said they needed a spark. That's like hope is a tax.
Chris, come on. You're really believing that. Come on.
No. Well, I'm trying to take him at his word. I mean, okay. If you don't, Kim, if you want to be cynical and not believe in anything that Bob Gregory said, I get that. I have no problems with that. But then all we're doing is, if you can't believe anything that he said,
I'm not saying
then we
anything.
Are left to our
that.
Own devices believe- to try to figure out exactly what they were thinking. And none of it is positive.
Hey, you know, just moving on, Scott, we were remarking last night, and, you know, down on the field, it was definitely bad, but I guess you could even get it in the press box. Were we at a Grateful Dead concert last night?
Oh, I know. It was so bad. That is the worst I've ever smelled it in Husky Stadium. It was literally like we were at Hempfest. It was terrible.
It's halftime, you know, they're running out. So Bill Small stops. He looks, he goes, what the hell?
Yeah.
I'm looking up in the stands and I'm seeing like four guys with Wazoo jerseys on with big old blunts blowing smoke. Yeah.
I mean, seriously. Well, I smelled it the entire walk in from, cause where we park is over by the hospital. And I smelled it the whole way in, and I was like, what, did a skunk die? I hate the smell of stinkweed, okay? I hate it. And that's what that is to me. And so I hate the smell of it in the first place, but I smell it the whole walk in. I get up to the press box, and it just wafts in the entire game. And, I mean, no wonder I had that second cookie. I mean, it was, usually I don't, because those cookies are big that they have up there, but man, that was really bad.
You want to know something that's even crazier, Scott?
What?
Guess who was on the sidelines shooting photos on the sidelines at Husky Stadium on the Washington side?
Who?
Police Captain Adrian Diaz.
Yeah.
Seattle Chief of Police, Adrian Diaz, and there was more security there, but I've never been at a football game and smelled that much weed ever. It was like Ted Nugent 1978 in the old Coliseum.
Yeah, it was bad. That was bad.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you kind of noticed that. And post game, Washington State fans stormed the field, and I almost got run over a couple of times, and Jason DeLora got handed a flag, and he didn't just place it at the 50-yard line. He took it all the way back and just planted that sucker on the
50-yard line. I love these guys trying to plant it on a turf field.
Yeah, that's turf field, yeah.
But, you know, that's almost a decade worth of frustration from that program. I understand. Not a great look from their quarterback, but who's going to stop it? There were 5,000 to 7,000 people on the field.
How many Cook fans were at the stands last night?
Oh, well, I mean, they listed it at 68, a little over 68,000 at the stadium. I would say at least half were Washington fans or were Washington State fans.
Yeah, no.
So, every time they try to go Huskies cheer, I heard more Cougs than Huskies. And
no, it was bad.
It was loud. And the Cougs, you know, my guess is there was probably somewhere between 25 and 30,000 Cougar fans there.
Yeah, no, like I said, crazy with the amount of Coug fans in there, the amount of weed smell that was in there. We'll see if that happens again next year and then the post game. But, you know, I don't have a problem with, you know, planting the flag and storming the field and all kind of. I think that's what college football's about, and especially a rivalry game. Throw a little juice into it for next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as no one gets hurt, that's exactly what should be happening. And Scott, I got to say, you may think it's a bad look for DeLora to do what he did. I guarantee you there is no Washington State fan that's going to give a hoot about that. They're going to love it.
I understand that. I understand the Cougs. I understand the Cougs. I don't think that's the greatest look in the world, but whatever. It is what it is. I wouldn't expect a Husky to do that at Washington State.
Hey, Washington State's offensive coordinator. Washington State's offensive coordinator tweeted out after the game. He tweeted out a picture of Jimmy Lake with the run the damn ball hat, and he goes, "I got it, Coach. I figured it out." Yeah. You know, it's like, guys were going to milk that for everything
right
they could.
That's some good smack talk right there. But
were going to milk it for everything they could.
I wouldn't have expected Washington to do that flag thing at Oregon, and you know that this is the equivalent for them.
Hey, what I want to know, guys, is was this sneaky by Washington to lose like this to like force Washington State to have to hire Jake Dickert full time?
We can get into the coaching search in a minute. That'll be one that we'll talk about for sure. But let's go ahead and get into the coaching search. It's Saturday. We got football games. Got a lot of stuff going on. Next week is championship weekend, and there's all kinds of stuff going on. you know, percolating right now in the coaching search, and I'm expecting Washington to do something here pretty quick. I'm guessing something will get done today or tomorrow, and possibly an announcement as soon as tomorrow, Monday or Tuesday. But, you know, from everything I'm hearing, this thing's going to get done here pretty quick as they're winding down.
It absolutely needs to. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Be done.
Yeah.
And I, you know, Kim, there, someone put a rumor on the message board that, they can confirm that flight to Ames happened yesterday.
I can confirm that Jen Cohen was at Husky Stadium last night.
Yeah, but that was at night. This person said it was in the morning.
You're not going to fly to Ames, Iowa and get back and be on the sidelines of Husky Stadium at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. I have a hard time believing that happened.
Yeah, no.
And I don't believe they're going after Matt Campbell anyway. I think they've got their eyes turned to someone else.
Greetings, fantasy warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
Yeah, I mean, we'll do what we did last night that didn't work. You know, both you guys, Scott, you know, Chris, you weren't there, but, you know, I've been following the coaching search heavily, and I've been talking to a ton of people, just a ton of people. So shoot a name at me, and I'll tell you where things stand and my impression and give you some rumors or whatever you want, but somebody shoot a name at me.
Lincoln Riley.
Lincoln Riley is going to be interesting because you've got Scott Woodward, the former athletic director here at Washington, and then he went to Texas A&M and signed Jimbo Fisher to a big contract. He's now at LSU, and he still has an opening down at LSU, which may be the biggest opening so far. He doesn't have anybody, and those who have been around Scott and followed him know that he likes to make a splash and sign long-term deals. He signed Lorenzo Romar to a 7-year deal. He blew everybody out of the water by giving Jimbo Fisher a 7-year contract, which, you know, 10-year contracts, the last couple have been signed, you know, seem to be the norm. But Scott Woodward doesn't have a coach down at LSU yet, and, you know, rumors rampant on the internet yesterday that he's willing to – he's got a Brinks truck somewhere that he's going to back up. And the rumors yesterday was he was going to back it up to Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, you know, and if that Oklahoma job was to open up, I think that's definitely a job that Dave Campbell would be interested in. But, you know, I've got really good sources down at USC that say that that deal is done at USC and expect that to be announced on Sunday or Monday. So, you know, my guy says, well, if LSU is going to back that Brinks truck up, they better hurry up because USC is coming. But then another really great source of mine talking about the athletic director at Oklahoma and the type of guy he is. And he says he's not going to let money get in the way. And if Scott Woodward's going to, back up a Brinks truck, that Oklahoma's got one ready to go and a little bit more. So I think that Oklahoma job and LSU, what Scott Woodward is going to do, I think it's going to have some heavy reverberations throughout college football, and expect something to happen soon on that. So,
okay. Well, just to make sure people understand, you were talking about Matt Campbell, not Dave Campbell.
Matt Campbell. Yeah,
I'm not sure who Dave Campbell is, but we're talking about Matt Campbell.
I call him Dave Campbell. I call Kalen DeBoer. I call him Matt DeBoer. So I just kind of got those in my brain. Give me another name.
My name is going to be Justin Wilcox.
And Justin Wilcox, I think, is somebody that Washington has kicked the tires with. And a lot of people just are sour on Justin Wilcox based upon his record. But if you take a look at his first 2 years at Cal, he actually did a pretty good job and then had a I'll get that later, you guys. Well, should I take this? Should I take it? Should I step out?
You want?
Yes. Fetters and I can riff. All right.
Well, I would just, I mean, Justin Wilcox is definitely
give me 2 minutes. Give me 2 minutes, guys.
Okay. Yeah. Chris, let's talk about Justin Wilcox.
Yeah. No, I just think it's interesting to me. And this goes more to philosophy than actually about Wilcox specifically. But I just feel like the way Washington has gone, and especially with how poorly things have gone offensively, it's, first of all, it's hard not to think of Jen Cohen wanting to go offense first, like an offensive-minded coach as opposed to a defensive-minded coach. That would make sense, right? But the other thing is, even if Justin Wilcox was an offensive guy, let's say that, it still kind of begs the question, are they going to want to go after a guy who is going to have to go ahead and have to hire a coordinator to make this thing come together? Because it just adds another layer of uncertainty to a situation where it's not a sure thing anyway. It's because there's no coaching hire that they're going to make that isn't going to come with, you know, with some questions, with some uncertainty. When you add an extra layer of uncertainty with kind of not knowing the coordinator piece, that to me is a red flag. And I don't know how you feel about that.
I'm back, yeah. by the way, guys.
Okay. So, I mean, Justin Wilcox to me, I mean, if he is the guy, I don't think it will be, but if he is the guy, then I know that some people are blasé on him as a head coach, and who's he going to be able to bring in, stuff like that. I think that's the biggest question. Who can he bring in as an offensive coordinator, as a defensive coordinator? He's been very hamstrung by what Cal is able to do because of their budget down there, and they are just so limited on what they can do. They also can't get certain players in from a recruiting standpoint, and the academic side was not flexible at all. And I know that's been an issue up here at Washington in certain instances, but it's even more so down at Cal. So I don't think it would be the worst hire in the world. And I actually think it could wind up being pretty good. He could have a lot of success at the University of Washington, but a lot is going to depend on who his support staff is. And if the rumors are correct, Kim, he may meet whoever the coach is that they bring in may have $5 to $6 million a year for their assistant salary pool. And that's up there with almost everybody in the country.
Yeah. And the reason that I'm really intrigued with Justin Wilcox, and I've told you guys this before, I mean, he's a gym rat. I mean, he's not married, doesn't have kids. And, you know, the rumors of him when he was at University of Washington was that's all he does is football. That's the only life he has. Football is his wife. Football is who he has the relationship with. That's all he does. And when you take a look at some of the other guys, which, let's say, for example, like Kalen DeBoer, you know, coming up from Fresno State, I doubt he's going to bring his entire staff here because I think he's going to need to improve that staff. And if Justin Wilcox was to come here, Justin Wilcox would definitely need to improve his staff. But when you take a look at the background, where's Justin Wilcox been? He was at Boise State for a long time. He was at Tennessee. He's been at Wisconsin. He's been at USC. He's been at Washington. He's got connections with the Oregon people. So he's got all that familiarity with the coaches, and he has a lot more relationships. Personally, I think that Justin would be able to put a better staff together. And people are talking about, yeah, but he hasn't had a winning record. Like I said, he was on a roll doing pretty well at Cal until COVID hit. And then City of Berkeley, the Cal administration and the county down there just really hamstrung him. First of all, you know, with the good teams, people talk about, well, Jeff Tedford did it. Well, Jeff Tedford could bring in guys like Marshawn Lynch and Aaron Rodgers who would never be able to get into Cal today. They changed the academic standards here a few years back at Cal, limiting to who they could get in. We heard that Ethan Garbers wanted to transfer to Cal, but they couldn't get Ethan Garbers in because they're not taking transfers. They can no longer take JC guys, you know, and then, you know, practice, you know, being able to only do practice so many times, so many guys limited in the film room team. It was just so many restrictions on what you could do down at Cal. You know, and people talk about the offense he runs. Well, Bill Musgraves wasn't the guy that he really wanted. I think Bill Musgrave was the guy that he could afford. You know, so there's a lot of restrictions, and I know a lot of people just going to go, heads going to explode. But at the end of the day, I think a guy like Justin is a guy that they've kicked the tires on, but I still think that they wind up with more of an offensive-minded coach who's going to have to hire a really good defensive coordinator. So,
is there anything you need to update us on from your call or no?
I'll tell you guys afterwards.
Okay, sounds good. And
well, the one last thing I would say to kind of put a bow on the talk about Justin Wilcox is that, again, you may be absolutely right, Kim, about the restrictions and not wanting to hire the guy that he wanted instead of having to settle for a guy like Musgrave. But the fact is that he's tried a pro-style guy with Musgrave. He's tried a more wide-open guy with Bo Baldwin, who we all thought Bo Baldwin, that was going to be his stepping point. You know, he was ready to go. He had won national championship at Eastern Washington. He was ready to go. He was an up-and-coming guy, and it never worked out. To me, the red flag is, okay, he's tried the spread style. He's tried the pro-style. He has not been able to find a system that works in his philosophy or whatever. And you could maybe explain it. I don't understand. But to me, the red flag is he has not been able to find an offense, and it hasn't been for a lack of trying. So why hasn't that worked?
Well, I'd be interested to see what he could do with $1 million budget for a coordinator and $500,000 for a second guy on the offensive coordinator staff. So, you know, it would be interesting to see what he could do with a larger budget, you know. So we'll see what's going on there. But, you know, let me just go over a couple of other guys. It looks like Dave Aranda was a guy that Washington was really interested in. And also USC was really interested, but everything indicates that he's going to re-sign a contract with Baylor. And probably one of the guys that really intrigued me, I talked to Cooper Patagna. If you listen to the podcast I did with Cooper, who was in the recruiting offices at Washington, at Oregon, at Michigan, Cincinnati, LSU. So he's been around, but a guy that he really liked was Dave Clawson, the head coach at Wake Forest. Sounds like Washington was kicking the tires really hard with Dave Clawson and was really wanting to, you know, get into that mix. But sounds like some personal family issues back in Wake Forest. His wife, you know, it's noted as a breast cancer survivor. He's also got some kids, but it sounds like for personal reasons that Dave Clawson's going to stay at Wake Forest. And that's a guy, it sounds like Washington was really in on and really wanted to get in on, but it looks like he's going to stay at Wake Forest. So
Brett Brennan's
a name that keeps on coming up.
San Jose State, by the way, for people who don't know.
Yeah, and I know the first thing people are going to do is they're going to look at, well, look at what he did this year. Well, he lost his big-time quarterback at the beginning of the year, but I don't think he's a guy for Washington. And, you know, we either heard rumors that he might be a candidate for Washington State, but the problem with Washington State, they have no money. They can't afford to buy his buyout from San Jose State. That's why I think that the interim coach Dickert is going to be named the coach there, because they can afford him. But Brett Brennan was a guy that was a finalist for the Arizona job, and I think he would have done a better job than Jeb Fish, but he used to be at Washington. He was a GA back in the day, but I think that's a name that you need to keep an eye on, not necessarily for Washington, but he's really well thought of and highly thought of down at San Jose State. So just a name to keep an eye on for other openings along the way, Brett Brennan at San Jose State. So,
Chris?
No, I know that you feel like something's going to happen in the next day or two, Kim, but it just feels like, at least the way the bigger hires are done, and especially the way that Jen Cohen deals with these things and is very, runs it in a very buttoned up situation.
Yep.
You're going to hear leaks from the major guys, you know, whether it's a Feldman or someone like that. That's where you're probably going to start to really get the heavy traction. And then by the time Washington actually announces it, it'll be the worst kept secret in Seattle. That's just kind of the way these things go.
Yeah. You know, we didn't talk about the guy who I think, you know, everything's pointing to right now. Kalen DeBoer, you know, he's the head coach down at Fresno State and really good, solid reputation. I don't have his stats in front of me, but he's won everywhere he's gone.
Yeah, what was he, 67-3 at Sioux Falls? Now, that's NAIA, but he took over for a coach who was a pretty good coach and took his talent and went 67-3 in, what, 4 years or 5 years?
There? Yeah, and then in 5 years. He was 49-1 in their conference, in the Great Plains Athletic Conference.
Yeah.
Won and three NAIA championships in 5 years. Yeah.
And then went to, I know he was at Fresno State under Jeff Tedford as the offensive coordinator. Then he went to Indiana where he had, is it Penix? Was he the quarterback for him? I'm pretty sure it was Penix.
Yeah, there was one of those guys. Yeah.
So, because I've been looking at, since DeBoer has started to emerge as probably the favorite to become the guy over the last 24 hours, I started looking at some of the guys that he's coached because, you know, Washington has two guys on the roster right now who are scholarship quarterbacks, or, well, three guys, but one of them's leaving. Two guys on the roster who are scholarship quarterbacks who are more of the drop back passers, not the guys who you're going to use much in the running game, although both of them can run a little bit, but, you know, that's not their game. Their game is throwing the ball around, distributing it to the guys, and that's kind of what he's been doing with Jake Haener down there at Fresno State. But I also wanted to see, because I think Washington needs to start going to more of the dual threat quarterbacks, the guys who can both run it and pass it, but be a primary threat as a runner, not just a guy who can make plays with his legs when things break down. So, and he, you know, Penix was that guy. They didn't use him that much that way, but when they did, he was always able to find some success.
Yeah. And when I see Fresno State play and I see the offense that he's running with Jake Haener, I go, yeah, I'd like to see Sam Heward be able to throw the ball downfield like that. So, you know, a lot of interesting stuff from Kalen DeBoer. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, the downfall of Justin Wilcox's record, but where Kalen DeBoer may have the record, but, you know, would Kalen DeBoer be able to put a staff together? There's a big difference. You know, when Coach Pete came here, Coach Pete had a way of recruiting at Boise State, and he had to turn 180 degrees on that, and it took him a while to adjust. He wasn't used to getting his nose bloodied by Notre Dame, USC, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Ohio State and Michigan, and that's a big step up when you're talking about recruiting. And that's why I think if they hire a guy, you know, like Kalen DeBoer, I think the staff that he assembles is going to be critical. And he's got one guy on the staff down there, Chris, that Washington fans would be familiar with.
Yeah, Kirby Moore, obviously Kellen Moore's brother. And, you know, a lot of people think that he's a guy whose star is on the rise, too. He coaches the receivers with them. The other thing I'd note, too, is that their offensive coordinator, Ryan Grubb, is a guy that's kind of come up the ranks with DeBoer. And he is a quarterback's coach as well, and he's coached quarterbacks a couple different places, but he really came up as an offensive line guy. And I think, to me personally, that's something that I would think as an offensive, if you're looking to see how they can improve the offense right away, you need to have someone who can really overhaul that offensive line and get them doing something different, because right now it's a mess. And their offensive line coach right now at Fresno State's a guy named Roman Sopolu. And, you know, again, you know, don't want to stereotype it. Don't want to get into that realm. And we don't know what the future for a guy like Akaka Maloy might be, but they need to keep that pipeline going with the Polynesian kids. And cause they've had a great amount of success with that. They need to continue with that. And so there's definitely a few things to really, really like, about what's going on if you really look a little closer with this Fresno State staff, for instance. And there's another guy that will be familiar to some Washington fans, and not necessarily for the good reasons, because he was a coach in the Tyron Willingham era, but one of the coaches at Fresno State right now who's the defensive pass game coordinator, JD Williams, a guy that we know very well.
Yeah, I didn't know he was down there.
Yep.
Yeah, good old JD, Curtis Williams' brother. Yeah. Hey, just another name that's kind of, you know, he was a hot name and seems to have faded, but team's probably going to be in the championship series. Luke Fickell at Cincinnati, hot name, but it looks like he's going to be playing, you know, after New Year's Day in the college football championship. And, you know, people that are looking to get coaches hire, I don't think anybody can wait that long. So I think Luke Fickell is out of reach or out of consideration because of his success. How's that rub you, Scott? Out of consideration because of his success.
Yeah, I know. Well, think about this, Kim. Now, you've made some mention on the message boards, and I'll ask you right now, don't go in a lengthy thing because I've got a scenario for you.
Do I ever go lengthy?
Yes, you do. Sometimes. Mario Cristobal, that's a name I'll throw at you, but then I got a scenario to throw at you guys after that.
I just keep on hearing that, you know, and we've been hearing it for a while, but boy, it's really started to heat up because Mario Cristobal at Oregon, and He's from Miami. He played at Miami. His father of Cuban heritage and immersed into the Cuban culture down there in Miami. Mario's wife is a former Miss Florida. The athletic director, who lots of rumors out there that Mario did not get along with, has been fired, and there's going to be a new athletic director. And boy, it just doesn't seem to go away. Mario Cristobal and his wife will pack up and head to South Beach.
Okay, so let's look at it this way. Do you see Mario Cristobal leaving Oregon before they play in the – let's say they win today against Oregon State. That puts them against Utah. Do you see him leaving before that?
Before the Utah game?
Before the Pac-12 title game.
No.
Okay.
But hold on. But just real quick.
You're not listening.
I've also heard one of the rumors is the deal's been in place for a couple of weeks.
Okay. So he doesn't leave before the Pac-12 title game, right?
Yeah.
Well, that does not really allow him much time at all to salvage any kind of recruiting class for Miami. Right? So maybe he doesn't leave right away, or if he does, whatever. What if Oregon says to themselves, look, we just lost Mario Cristobal to Miami. Luke Fickell is willing to leave. What if Luke Fickell ended up there?
Don't see that happening. I mean, I've got a pretty good connection down at Cincinnati, and Luke Fickell is a Midwest guy. He's got six kids. You know, from my understanding, he's that Midwest guy. He's not going to leave. And the job that, you know, that I've heard that he would have been interested was Penn State, because there was a lot of talk of James Franklin possibly going to LSU or to USC, but losing his last three games pretty much put a damper on that. And then he signed a 10-year contract extension with Penn State. So from my understanding, that would have been a job that he would have been interested in. And, you know, if Scott Woodward, you know, he's down there with that Brinks truck, and Ryan Day says, Lincoln Riley says, no, he might just go up the street to Ohio State and offer it to Ryan Day at Ohio State. And, you know, Fickell's got a history at Ohio State too. And that might be a job that he might be willing to take. So, you know, and they've already got that recruiting class together, and it could happen after signing day anyways. But I don't see Luke Fickell going to, you know, from who I've talked to, you know, and Oregon, I'm just going to get slaughtered on social media and on the Oregon site over even mentioning this. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'd say right now I'd give a 50-50 chance, you know, with Mario being gone.
Would they settle on DeReuter, do you think?
Or DeReuter? Not as a head coach. And they've also got Joe Moorhead there that they could elevate. But I think they'd shoot for bigger and higher because – I don't know.
Who else is out there?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's the question, you know, and the longer it goes, the harder it's going to get. But then, you know, we've got the whole NFL coaching carousel that hasn't begun either, you know, which usually happens a little bit later. So this is what's so fun about this time of year. You know, just
there's no reason Oregon can't back up the truck for Mario like Michigan State did for Mel Tucker and Franklin. You know, they did that for him at Penn State. But that's the thing, like, you know, if Tucker had jumped for LSU or jumped somewhere else, you know, I think that was a job that Fickell would have probably looked at pretty heavily. And I'm sure they would have coveted him big time. Because, again, I agree 100%, Kim. He's a Midwest guy. I don't see Fickell coming out here. I don't.
See, my big thing is, you know, when you're married to a former Miss Florida and her parents are in Miami and your parents are in Miami and you played in Miami and, you know, you take Miss Florida and put her in Eugene, and she's been in Eugene now for a few years. And hey, baby, we can either go back home to South Beach or we could stay here in Eugene. It'd be an interesting conversation. So we'll see what happens. Hey, real quick, another name that, you know, I'd heard a couple weeks ago, but doesn't look like it's going to happen. Jeff Brohm, the coach at Purdue, was a guy that was heavily mentioned because he, you know, had a connection to Jason Budakofer, who's an associate athletic director from came here from Purdue, and a connection there. But it sounds like his numbers for buyout and everything else are just out of control, just way, way, way too high.
Yeah.
Hang on.
For sure.
He's getting paid. I sent you something, Kim. Don't worry.
Right. Yeah, he's getting paid. So it's you know, Brom would have been an interesting hire, but he would be spendy. Very spendy.
Yes. Way too spendy, I think. And another thing to consider is that's a guy who he wants to eventually coach an NFL team. If he has any kind of success at Washington or his next job, wherever it is, he's probably going to the NFL. Now, that would mean Washington had success, but still.
Right. Well, the other thing, too, with Brom is that he's had some nice wins at Purdue, but it's not like he's been crushing it.
No.
Not for those kind of dollars. Not my opinion.
My texts and phone calls sometimes get a little crazy, guys. They do get a little crazy. So, hey, just anything else on the coaching search before I move on to something I definitely want to talk about?
Nope, nothing on my part because we've talked about the guy that we all think is going to make it.
So, well, yeah. And again, you know, we're at that point now, guys, where we can post this out, and within 2 hours, everything we've talked about has been blown out of the water.
Within how long?
A couple hours.
Yeah, no, 10 minutes.
Okay, 10 minutes. Well, okay, thank you for proving my point. Yeah, no, this is the time of where basically anything that's put down, in the recording, you can almost assuredly believe that it doesn't have a shelf life of very long.
Walking out of the tunnel, I mean, for those who don't know, when we do post-game interviews, we go up the tunnel, and to the left, there's the old team room, inside the tunnel at Husky Stadium. And then coming out of there, we walk down the tunnel, and if you look to your right, that leads to a whole nother corridor where the locker rooms and the weight rooms and everything is. But, walking down the tunnel last night and then seeing Bob Gregory, turn right and go back into the locker room, and then coming out of the tunnel inside Husky Stadium, and walking along there, and I see Akaika Molloy and his family, and I don't know how many of you personally know Akaika, but when it comes to quality people, I don't think they get any better than Akaika. Real loyal guy. His guys love him. He's a great father. He's got a great family. He's got a son that's a senior at Kennedy High School. And, he made a point to come over and talk to me a little bit. It was really just hard, just to see a guy like that who's so humble and his family, and to know his future is up in the air and he doesn't know where he's going to land, and got my phone again. I'll get that one later. Just the uncertainty in his eye of not knowing what's going to happen. And, I told him I hope to see him back, and I asked him how his son at Kennedy was doing, and he goes, well, he's looking for a walk-on place. He's a good high school football player. He's not a scholarship guy, but he's looking for some place to play football and possibly walk on at UW. So kind of a tough conversation with Akaika Molloy. You guys know what a great guy he is. And then
He posted something on Twitter last night just saying thanks for everything, Husky fans and everything. So
Super tough for a guy like that too, because it's his alma mater. Played at Washington. This is what he knows. This is what he loves. And it's difficult to say goodbye. And it's not like the coaching staff deserves a lot of praise this year. They did a lot of damage, but it started at the top. I mean, let's be real fair about that. It started right at the top. And a guy like Molloy didn't all of a sudden stop learning how to coach. He's a quality coach, and he's a good recruiter, and he's an asset to any staff. And so could he end up on a staff with a guy like Kalen DeBoer? I mean, we're speculating, obviously, but no reason why it couldn't happen. No reason why it couldn't happen.
Yeah, what's I always find interesting is I talked to a lot of, we saw a lot of former players last night, and then, I got phone calls from former coaches, and, they all tell me, I would say that a majority of the coaches that have been here at one time would be back here in a heartbeat. They loved it here. Ran into Tim Saha, the strength and conditioning coach. And, he's on the field with his family, showing uncertainty because he doesn't know what's going on. And he said, he's blessed enough to have a, playing career at Boise State and then be at Boise State for a long time and have a good run here. And he said, in this business, you tend to be a vagabond, and a lot of college football jobs are not in the best areas to raise families. When you stop and think about where a lot of college football teams play, I'm not sure I'd want to live in a lot of them, so this is a pretty good place to live. This is a pretty good place to raise a family. And I also gave him a hard time because We used to do strength coach radio with Ivan Lewis when Stark was here. We tried our best to get an interview of any type with Tim Saha. He just wasn't having any of that. And it was almost comical at times. We weren't having any. I'll tell you one quick story with Tim. He's a really good guy, and all the guys love him. And I was having trouble with those who understand what a T-band is. And my T-band was just killing me. And I said, can I ask you a question? He goes, I'm not going on the radio. I said, no. I said, my T-band's killing me. What do I do? And his exact words were, I tell you what to do, but you're not going to do it because it hurts and you're a pussy. What do I need to do? He goes, the only thing you can do is get on the foam roller and it's going to hurt and you're not going to do it. But that's just the kind of guy Tim was, you know. So I'm going to miss Tim Saha too if he doesn't return. So wish him well, as with all the coaches. And just real quick, and I hate to go on because I don't like to talk, you know, go on and ramble. But, you know, the one good thing is when Tyrone got fired, a lot of coaches had bought houses up here. The real estate market was in the toilet, and there was a lot of coaches that were upside down on their home purchases. I know coaches that had to cash in retirement to pay off, you know, the shortness of their home loans to get out of the houses that they had when they were here. Anybody on this coaching staff that bought a house, I think they're going to be okay. So there's a little bit of a silver lining there. So I think they'll be okay on their home purchases. So anyways, final thoughts, Chris Fetters. I got phone calls to return.
I think Washington fans need to flush the Apple Cup down the toilet. Don't even watch the tape. Don't even worry about it. It was kind of a doomed thing from the start, kind of a fool's errand, honestly, in a number of ways. And I think it is unfortunate that the coaches thought that Sam Heward was going to be the answer. But bottom line is, this is kind of a tragic situation in many senses. You know, I don't understand why Jimmy Lake decided to blow up what Chris Peterson built, especially after kind of, you know, really saying that he was very much a disciple of what Peterson was doing with Built for Life and all that stuff. But he was so insistent on doing it his own way. He ultimately, it was the rope that ultimately hung his coaching career on. And it's sad to see. And it really had ripple effects throughout the entire season for obvious reasons. And it rippled down through his coaches and really affected what they could do and how they could do it. And we saw all of that come into an absolute car crash during the Apple Cup. So don't watch it. You know, Washington fans can just flush that one down the toilet. You got a new coach coming soon. I know Kim thinks it could be a day or two. I think it might be a day or two when the rumors start coming out. I think Washington may announce it a few days after that, but it'll end up being the worst kept secret in Seattle. And hopefully it's a coach that, you know, everyone can rally around, not just the players and coaches, but the fans can as well. You know, obviously there's going to be a lot of transfer portal activity. We'll be on top of it coming and going. I think there's a lot of Washington fans out there that think that this just is going to be a mass exodus. But I think what people need to understand about that as well is that this signals opportunities for guys that maybe were in the doghouse or were afterthoughts and not given consideration by the staff for whatever reason. So there's always guys that are in the pipeline coming and going. We'll see how that works. There is going to be some turnover. That's natural. But it's an exciting time, and I think it's positive momentum going forward. That's what I would say.
Scott Eklund, final thoughts. And by the way, I just want to give a thanks, Scott. Thanks for hitting the record button today.
But yeah, go ahead. Thanks. Final thoughts. Appreciate final that. Thoughts. Yeah. You know, I echo everything that Chris said. You know, you're just going to have to flush this one and realize that, you know, Washington just didn't have it this year. And for whatever reason, a lot of it was coaching, a lot of it was, you know, injuries, but whatever it was, this team did not look good all season long. And that continued again in the Apple Cup. The good thing is that we're turning a page and a new staff is going to be here. I believe Jen Cohn will go out and find a very quality head coach to come in and be the guy to lead this program back into the rankings and back into being one of the national powers that it should be. And It's exciting. It's an exciting time, and it's an exciting time to be around Dogman.com. Because Kim, what is going on this weekend?
Well, we always kind of say, you know, what's rule number one? We only have one rule at Dogman.com. What's rule number one, you guys?
Don't be a dumbass.
Pretty much all we need, but we got a promo running. And if you're not a subscriber to Dogman.com, if you don't get on this within the next couple of days, I think you're going to have a violation of rule number one. We only do this once a year, 75% off on an annual subscription, and it includes CBS Paramount Plus, lots of good stuff on Paramount Plus, and kind of like the way I'm justifying it, if your wife's going to look at that credit card bill and saying, what are you doing? Tell her you bought Paramount Plus, because if you bought Paramount Plus for a year, it's going to be more expensive than Dogman. But after your 7-day trial period expires, you'll get free Paramount Plus included and 75% off on Dogman.com, which, you know, you just can't beat. So, tell your friends if they've thought about joining Dogman, and, you know, no better time to do it now. And this is going to be the last promotion we're going to have for a while. And we've been doing this a long time, and we've worked our butts off. And if you go back to the longtime subscribers, to what we used to do, to what we do now, I mean, we used to try to put out a couple stories, you know, a week maybe. And now we're usually minimum at 4 stories a day, you know, so just a lot going on. And for those who are just looking at the front page and they don't really get on the message boards, because they can't read, that's where all the good information is going to be. You're not going to find it on the front page. You're going to find it on the message boards, like where these private planes are landing and where they're taking off to and who owns them. So there's all kinds of crazy stuff out on the message boards. So no better time to subscribe to Dogman.com now. Also, if you're looking for the daily updates as well as breaking news alerts, you want to be alerted when there's a commit or a coach is announced, shoot us a note, huskystadium@gmail.com. We will get you hooked up, huskystadium@gmail.com. Subject line newsletter, we will get you hooked up. It's going to be a busy couple of days, guys. Scott, don't schedule anything. Oh, and one more thing. We've got basketball tonight. Winthrop, 7 o'clock tip-off. And
Hey, you know what? I've got a theory.
What's that?
New coach hired tonight. You know why?
Because we're all going to be scattered and gone.
At the game.
Yeah. That's what happened when Sark was hired. We were at the basketball game.
I'm sitting in the stands. Bettors will be in the press box, and you'll be on the floor.
Well, and I'm having a pregame meal. I'm going out for a pregame meal. Guess where I'm going for a pregame basketball meal, guys? Take a guess.
Varlamos?
Going to Varlamos. Get some chicken parm.
I'm
going to
be right across the street from you.
You going to Jack's?
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, you go ahead and go to Jack's. I'm going to Varlamos, and I'm going to eat in Varlamos. So,
yeah, I love Varlamos, but special night with some friends that are in town.
All right. Hey, for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grenolds along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. We are recording. Go Dogs.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.